ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Madeline DeNono, CEO of the Gina Davis Institute on Gender in Media. With over 30 years of successful international executive leadership experience in entertainment, nonprofit, digital and consumer packaged goods industries, Madeline leads the Institute's strategic direction, research, education, advocacy, financial, and operational activities. Madeline, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here with you.
I wanted to begin with a little bit of background on your career because you have so much experience in entertainment, marketing, and business. And I wanted to know if you could give me the Cliff Notes version of how you came to be in your role as the CEO of the Gina Davis Institute.
I would say that many of us have many layers to what we're passionate about. And hopefully, if we're lucky, we're able to pursue careers that reflect, you know, our passions. And one of my passions was always in the arena of pro-social advocacy and activism. And after spending 30 years very successfully on the business side of the entertainment industry, I was wondering if there was a way to kind of expand that and encompass not only the entertainment industry, but something that was more focused on pro-social and social activism. And that actually was a question that I was curious about. And I went on a quest to figure out if that was possible. And ultimately, that quest led me to meeting Gina. And I remember when we met, I had all these big ideas for the Institute. And I said to her, what do you want? And she said, I want world domination. And I took a beat and I said, okay, this is what it looks like. And we've been rolling like that for 9 years.
So for people who are not familiar with the Gina Davis Institute and your track towards world domination, can you tell us about your mission?
In a nutshell, we're changing media to inspire girls and boys. And the way that we have approached that is by analyzing media messages in popular content that is targeted and consumed by children. And we focus on middle-aged young children because they are the most vulnerable and impressionable. And we all know that media is a strong influence in shaping culture, societal norms, our beliefs, our behaviors, and even to the degree of looking at a window of work into career choices.
Well, that's a perfect segue into, I read in Fast Company, they talked about some research you had done, and it was called the Scully Effect. And can you tell us a little bit about what the Scully Effect is and what you found?
It's a pleasure to talk about that project. And we have to give a shout out to our friends at 21st Century Fox, who knew and had a hunch about what they called the Scully Effect. And because of the character of Dana Scully being on TV in X-Files for so many years, they knew anecdotally that many women and girls pursued careers in STEM because of that. And they said, we want to know for a fact, the show is going to be going off the air, and we want to know if we were right. And so they asked us to conduct a study of women who have watched the show. And so we looked at about 2,000 women, about a third were about 25 to 39, 71% 4 year older. And we asked them a bunch of questions. And what we found was that two-thirds, 63% of the women who are familiar with the Dana Scully character said she increased their belief in the importance of STEM And among the women who were familiar with the character, 50% said that the Dana Scully character increased their interest in STEM. 43% more considered working in STEM. 27% more studied STEM. And nearly two-thirds said that they work in STEM because of Dana Scully. And so it was very, actually very, very influential in inspiring women and girls. And they, our friends at 21st Century Fox, put together a great little video, which you can find on hashtag Scully Effect, that actually has real women and girls talking about how the character influenced them. So it was a really fun project.
That's amazing. Were they surprised by the outcome that it not only was this anecdotal stuff that they had heard, but that actually the numbers were what they had believed they might be, but so full-throated in their support of their thesis?
No, they weren't surprised. They were just really happy that they were right all along.
That's fantastic. You know, one of the things that's interesting is there's so much common knowledge, the so-called common knowledge floating around the industry. For instance, one of the things that is sort of commonly accepted statements that people make is that men don't see films or shows about women leads, that there's their female movies and then the rest, that women will go with their boyfriends to films, but they boyfriends won't go see the women's films. Now, based upon your research, because you're a research-driven, data-driven organization with hard facts to back up what you do, is this true? Is this common knowledge true?
Well, what we would call that is a myth, you know, a Hollywood myth that has been used for decades as the reason why more movies, more shows starring female protagonists won't sell, won't play. And what we have found from our theatrical research in looking from 2015 all the way up to 2017, which we just released last night, we found that female-led films generated 18.7% more in 2015, 7.3% more in 2016, and 38% more in 2017. And this was looking at the top 100 family films, so G, PG, PG-13 in America. But for 2017, we also looked at a snapshot of the global marketplace, and we found that, yes, female-led films also dominated and did perform more at the box office internationally as well.
That's actually one of the things I was curious about. Is the research US based or is it global in your studies? So it's global?
We do both. We do both depending on whether it's sponsored research, whether it's research we're doing, you know, on our own. So we do have a combination of domestic and international research.
Mm-hmm. I see. Have you found any cultural variations in that research?
We have. And it's been a while since we did a study, but we did two types of studies. We did a quantitative study and a qualitative study. And when we look quantitatively at the 10 largest film markets around the world, we did find some differences. We found that in countries like China, Korea, Japan, they had a higher percentage of female presence on screen and behind the screen, which was very interesting. And so that was, you know, surprising. And then the other thing that was surprising was there were so many co-productions between the US and the UK that we had to create an 11th market, so to speak. And we found out that the UK on its own with its own films did very well in terms of percentages of female characters and actually behind the camera. But when you looked at the numbers for US-UK collaborations, we pulled them all the way to the bottom. So that introduced a question of what happens when the United States starts investing in content overseas, what happens? And so that's an open question.
That is fascinating. So, and is the US alone worse than the combination of the US and the UK, or do we just, or is it about the same? Is it just that our when we're there, the presence of the United States simply pushes everything else.
It did in this particular scenario. We don't have data to say what's happening with the U.S. and China, what's happening with U.S. and India. That we don't know. That would be a great study that we'd love to do. But
well, wouldn't it be great? I mean, as Netflix is pushing globally, it would be fascinating to see some of this stuff. I'm very surprised at the China, Korea, Japan, that again flies into mythology that, you know, clearly I'm wrong in my assumptions. It's really interesting.
It was interesting. And what we found when we did qualitative research in markets like Brazil and Nigeria and India, we found that in many cases, like in Nigeria, parents wanted authentic Nigerian content for their children. They wanted, versus them having a diet of Western, programming and licensed programming, they really wanted to see native programming for their children.
Right. Well, and I suppose it's probably more influential. Although one of our greatest exports as a nation in the U.S. is our entertainment. And that's a lot of the box office comes from international sales. Isn't that the case? When you obviously you've done a lot of this research, and as a woman in industry, you've, experienced and gone through some of this stuff, both as an individual. So a lot of the numbers and the facts sort of are reinforcing things that you're already aware of. Has there ever been data that's come out about bias and stereotypes that has surprised you?
Absolutely. And it really came from our own data. So historically, the way that content analysis is conducted, there's a very systematic way that many graduate students will view content and code it and market, and they repeat a cycle. And a few years ago, we received a very generous technology grant from Google.org. And the question that they wanted to help us answer was, could computer science help us do our research more efficiently, deeper? And so with that technology grant, we partnered with the USC School of Engineering, Viterbi School of Engineering, and developed a media measurement tool, which we affectionately call GDIQ, which stands for the Gina Davis Inclusion Quotient. And what this technology allows us to do is to automate this analysis. So we can evaluate a moving image in real time. And two of the data points that Gina always, always wanted to know that was humanly impossible was screen and speaking time. So there's total percentage of characters, and then there's the screen and speaking time for the character. And that level of unconscious bias was only revealed in 2015 when we unveiled GDIQ, and we found out that not only were there fewer female characters, but they were only on screen and speaking about a third of the time. And that asks the question, where is that happening? Part of it is in the script, but part of it is point of view with camera. So, the old adage is, we don't want to see or hear women. There can be more women present. It really begs that question. And especially when you have male and female co-leads, why is that female character only speaking and on screen a third of the time?
Well, that I'm actually curious, and you may not know the answer to this, but when we had talked earlier in our conversation about female-led films doing better at the box office, actually, the 38% this most recent year, even in a female-led film, do the women get short shrift in screen and speaking time?
Yes.
That's depressing. And when you get this information, what action do you take with it? You have the data. How do you go back to the studios with it?
So the purpose of having the data is so we could educate, engage, and motivate change with leading content creators in advertising, in television, in film, in digital. And so the purpose was to use the data as currency, as a way to have a dialogue in a very objective way. They are the facts. And it's been extremely helpful to have the data, the facts, and not opinion. When we meet with people, and it's very, very well received, and people are very appreciative because we're not attacking people. We're not pointing fingers. We're just saying, here's what's in the data. Now, how can you use that? How can this be a tool for you?
Right. Well, isn't that interesting? I mean, I guess what's curious also is you have so many, there are so many different levers. There's an element of unconscious bias, you know, that people tend to like people like themselves. So if the financing is coming from men, maybe they're more comfortable putting their pocket of money with a male director, and then, you know, male versus female gaze and how they're going to position the camera and the whole, everything, it just sort of rolls up into that. And even after the fact, when we're talking about films at the Tribeca Film Festival, they had a Scarface reunion where they were talking about the film. I don't know if were you familiar what happened during the questioning there? They talked about the craft with all the different actors, but when they got to Michelle Pfeiffer, the question had to do with her weight during her role. What was interesting, though, is the audience actually booed. And I think that shows where, as a society, things have started to shift. And if we think about unconscious bias being that sort of thumbprint of culture in our brain that we're not even aware of, perhaps it is shifting slowly, incrementally, but it's still very present. I'm curious, you know, we've talked about films. Do you also look at advertising and television?
We do. We had the privilege of conducting an extensive study for Cannes Lions. And that resulted because I had the privilege of serving as the jury president for the Glass Lion in a few years ago. And Cannes Lions said, hey, we wonder how we're doing in advertising. We're very progressive. So they gave us access to their film craft winners and shortlist. And we analyzed about 2,069 commercials from English-speaking countries, US, UK, Australia, Canada, and we looked at 12 years. And this study was co-funded by J. Walter Thompson. They're a great partner. And what we found was that when we look at the ratio of male to female characters, it was worse in advertising. We saw that male characters were on screen 4 times more. They spoke 7 times more. They were 2.5 times more funny. We found that they spoke about power and achievement, and that the dialogue for female characters was relegated to simple, one-syllable words. We found that of all the jobs that were portrayed, characters working in advertising, only 25% were women. And out of that, only 8% had a recognizable, you know, job. We found that 1 in 10 were, you know, hypersexualized, and it goes on and on and on. So as you can imagine, it was quite the talk of Cannes in 2016. And so since we were doing a lot of work in advertising, what we have found in looking at television is that television does a better job. And you see more female protagonists on screen because you have more females in business decisions and content creating decisions behind the scenes. And when you look at, you know, what Ava DuVernay did with Queen Sugar and Melissa Rosenberg, you know, did with Jessica Jones, they had 13 episodes. So they could pick 13 different directors for that. Whereas in the feature side, there may only be about 500 films coming out of the US. You'd have to check me on that, where you have one. So there's such a proliferation of television because of the digital platforms that there's more opportunities in television right now than there is in TV/digital than there is in traditional film.
Well, that's actually a perfect segue into my next question is if you look at some of these other digital content areas, I mean, including like YouTube, where you have user-generated content. And I'm curious if user-generated content also exhibits a bias, or is that too granular for you guys to be looking at?
you know, YouTube does scrutinize it, scrutinizes its numbers. And I don't know where they are with their top channels. So I couldn't really speak to it in terms of out of the top 100 channels, what percentage is female driven. We'd have to ask them, and I'm sure they'd be happy to share that with us. Not sure.
Right. Well, it's interesting because I'm sort of curious. This is, you have the industry providing one level of gender split, if you will, but when people are generating it on their own, are there young women who are YouTubers, you know, who are defining their career as producers and directors and characters all on their own? And I'm curious, you had done work in earlier in your career in the digital space, digital content, right? Before you had switched over, I think. Is that right?
I've crossed platforms. I've worked on everything, but I would say theme parks and music in terms of my career. But I've kind of dabbled across entertainment sectors, as many people have done.
Right. Have you found a pretty consistent culture around gender, or did you find pockets that were more open? I mean, you had mentioned television right now tends to have more women behind the scenes. Was that, do you believe that's a new thing, or has that always been the case?
Based on not only our data, but data from other academics, TV has always performed better in terms of behind the camera than feature films.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. What are some things that a consumer who's looking at this, if there's a parent, what can they do to help their children, boys and girls, understand bias or what they're seeing, you know, better? Are there things that they can do?
Absolutely. I think if you are the parent or the caretaker of a young child, it's important to watch what they are watching with them as much as you can. And it's less about censorship, but it's more about engaging them and helping them acquire a sense of filtering and media literacy around what they're consuming. And I think it's easy if you're watching something with a child to say, hey, you know, could that character have been played, you know, by a girl? Could the girl have been the baseball player? Could the girl have been the scientist? You know, there's a lot of, it's just subtle cues. And that's definitely, you know, one thing that I think is very, you know, very important for boys, you know, and girls, so they can grow up valuing each other's stories. And then, you know, even if people aren't in the entertainment, I'll give you an example. I had the privilege of speaking at a conference, and there was a financial services company that was there. And one of the executives approached me afterward and said, I'm trying to recruit women to our company in this particular sector of our business, and we're not having much luck. Why do you think that is? And I said, well, I really don't know, but what does your website look like? How are you messaging to women? What are the images that you're using on your website? How are you writing the job description? And take a look at that and then let me know. And by the time I returned to Los Angeles, I had this very long phone call saying, oh my goodness, I'm on with our webmaster, we're changing. And I actually had an opportunity to speak to this person. This was back in like 2013. And I recently spoke to the person and they told me they permanently changed how they recruited, the images on their website, how they crafted job descriptions because of this dialogue that we had.
Wow. That's amazing. Well, that's really influential and that makes such a difference. That's incredible. So we're running through our time with you, but before we go, I wanted to ask what you are most excited about coming ahead. What has got you most jazzed about the tasks that are coming down the pike?
Well, from a research standpoint, we're extremely excited about the response to our research tool. We're extremely excited about upcoming features. We're actually developing a script-based, a word-based, think of it as spell check for gender bias, tool that will allow us to work with creators, advertisers on scripts, on briefs, so that they can measure themselves and put it through a gender lens before they even start production. So we're really, really excited about that. And we're really excited about the willingness of the industry to use the GDIQ as a standard, so to speak, to help them with their D&I diversity and inclusion initiative. So we're really, really excited about expanding that and taking that forward.
That's fantastic. So finally, where can our listeners find you and learn more about the Institute?
Well, we would love to invite your listeners to sign up for our Smart Brief, which is on our website. It's an e-newsletter that's focused on gender and media related topics. We have a Facebook page. We have a Twitter feed that is at GDIGM. And we would love people to stay connected. We also just launched a CJANE Advocates program for people who may not be able to donate at this time. And it's a way for them to get involved in very specific ways. So we would invite your listeners to check all of that out.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for spending the time with us today. It's fascinating, important work, and I can't wait to see the next report.
Thank you, and I hope we get to meet in New York again.
Yes, indeed. Take care. We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who helped bring the program to life. First, my friend, Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open. And of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media. And a big thank you to our guest, Madeline Genono. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.